Good morning. I see someone here I haven't seen in a long time. He's come from Europe. Welcome. Quite a few of you I haven't seen in a long time. Lovely to see you. Welcome. And also for those of old farts like us who've been here, were here all day yesterday, thank you for coming back. Appreciate that. It's a special time of year, isn't it? Auspicious, really. You know, in the autumn, and the leaves start to fall, and the light dims, it's very different in the spring. I just feel really cheered up by all the pinks and whites on all the blossoms, the pale green of the leaves as they just unfold. Also, kind of the big surprise of blossoms coming last week and snow. There they were together. What a beautiful, beautiful thing. Spring. Today, celebration of Holy Week and Easter, coinciding this year very much with Passover. I think today is the next to last day of Passover. Two profoundly poignant spring observances, particularly for those of us in the West. So this week, I was reading a blog by Rabbi Arthur Waskow. I'm a big fan of his. And he wrote this year of his experience of simultaneous feelings of grief and gratitude that mark Passover. He wrote of the grief, the feelings for the firstborn of Egypt that died, and the enduring gratitude for the firstborn of the Jews that allowed the continuation of those people. And that is what's celebrated very much in the Passover. The community of people who have survived and flourished. And of course, you know, it struck me also that Easter too is a combination of grief and gratitude. Grief that Jesus, the great teacher of love and social justice, was tortured and crucified, died. And yet, a sense of uplifting gratitude that his teachings, that there is always a continuous rebirth and redemption of those teachings of love and social justice. So a kind of resurrection of the values of the first century of Christian spirit. So spring mingles these feelings of grief and gratitude. Made me think of T.S. Eliot's well-known lines. April is the cruelest month, breeding lilacs out of the dead land, mixing memory with desire, stirring dull roots with spring rain. That startling contrast, fresh, delicate lilac petals, cold, hard winter ground, the dullness of winter, the deadness of winter, and the promise of spring. of the liveliness of spring, of the rebirth that spring offers. But why is April cruel? April is the cruelest month. The force of memory, the dead winter colliding with the desire for things to be different, with the desire that is evoked by the first buds of April. And there's also the gratitude for spring. The soft breeze today. The sound of warblers. You know, our plain old streets are now on every street are like, shh, these white blossoms on the trees. It's wonderful. We could be grateful for that. So naturally, I want to turn these thoughts that I had evoked by Rabbi Waskow's blog to the twinness of grief and gratitude in our practice, in our sitting practice. The way we turn the light around, the way we see ourselves clearly, and what we do with our spiritual praxis when we're doing it, how there is simultaneously grief and gratitude. You know, when we practice Zazen and when we do other kinds of inquiry that we do here at the Zendo, we also study sutras. We do interview with teachers. We do koan study and group work. We do a lot of different ways of approaching this. What Zazen does can also be expressed or done in different ways, and that's what we try to do here. Sometimes it's just being with Sangha and just organizing the cushions or fixing the lights. It's not so much in an organized way that we recognize, but rather we become aware of something when we're sitting. We see something when we're engaged in this kind of inquiry. And in that seeing, sometimes there is a kind of grief, a kind of sadness. Grief for maybe how we have missed the opportunity to offer our complete heart, to offer love and compassion, wisdom. Grief at our own inability to function with compassion sometimes. Grief at what we did, or grief at what we didn't do. Grief over our mistakes, over our unskillful karma. Finally, grief over our conditioning that made us who we are, that acts in such a way. Ours and that of others. I don't think there's a one of us who are longtime sitters that haven't sat tearful and grieving in our meditation. Experience sadness in the midst of a chanting or a service or a Zazen period. And yet, it doesn't look like that a lot of the time, because it's a moment. It passes. I think it flows into gratitude. Somehow we feel renewed after that direct look. Thankful that we've been aware of the wholeness of our feelings. To be present to our whole heart and mind, not just the slogans we've provided ourselves with, but our whole being. And then we become grateful for our life, just as it is, the good and the bad. And that gratitude extends all around us. We recognize that our life, just as it is, with all its imperfections, is also complete, whole, just as it is. So, in the Diamond Sutra, in section 16, there's a very quirky, tricky little section there. And I think it addresses what I want to talk about today. Here's what it says. Those gentlemen and ladies, Subhuti, who will learn, memorize, and master such discourses as these, so meaning the teachings of the Diamond Sutra, will be despised. They will be roundly despised. Whatever acts leading to perdition those living beings have done in former rebirths, through being despised, they will in life exhaust the dematerious acts of their former rebirths, and they will attain the awakening of Buddha. So what he's saying, if we here today take the teachings to heart of the Diamond Sutra, those teachings of interdependence, of emptiness, of impermanence, if we recognize the unfixed nature of reality, we will be despised. Other translations say, we will be reviled, or we will suffer contempt. And then it says, when that happens to us, when we're despised, suffer contempt, and reviled, somehow this experience exhausts our karma. Gets rid of our bad karma. And then we can be awakened. Now, a lot of times people read this and see it from the perspective of like sectarian disputes, right? Where you shouldn't be. This particular sutra emphasizes impermanence. This particular sutra emphasizes interdependence. And there are others that don't. So that would be why you would be despised. But there is another way to interpret this, and it is a traditional Zen way to interpret this, which is that we're talking about our thoughts. We're not talking about being reborn in another time. We're talking about our thoughts moment to moment. If we have a feeling of internal suffering at our thoughts, and we turn and meet ourselves directly, we can discern a path outside of our old karma. This is less about past lives and more about our consciousness. So Wei Ning, the sixth patriarch, makes this more clear. He says, speaking in terms of rebirth means the confused mind of the first thought, while this life means the awakened mind of the succeeding thought. Because the awake mind of the succeeding thought slights the confused mind of the first thought, the confusion cannot remain. Therefore, it says that the misdeeds of former times are thereby erased. Once confused thoughts have disappeared, one attains enlightenment. This is about our thoughts and how they create karma. How the clear mind and the awake mind erases the potential of karma. I understand this as the what happens when we're sitting zazen and we look directly at what's arising, and sometimes that has to do with unskillful actions that we've committed. We have a choice at that point. We can go back to the old story, rationalizing, protecting, denying, or we can look directly. Allow ourselves to look absolutely directly at our actions and our feelings about those actions. Without remorse. So, to look directly, to not say, I will only do this in my zazen and not that. What arises, arises. Not surprisingly, there's a Zen koan about this. Actually, there's only one that in the canon that we use about the Diamond Sutra. It's a case that Ocean worked with me on in the interview yesterday. It's the 97th case of the Blue Cliff Record. The Diamond Cutter Sutra, Scornful Revilement. And it reads, the Diamond Cutter Sutra says, if one is scornfully reviled by others, this person has done wicked acts in previous ages, which should bring him down into evil ways. But because of the scorn and vilification in the present age, the wicked action of former ages is thereby extinguished. Okay? So I love this. The koans are set up so that there's a koan and then there's a commentary by the teacher Sui Tu. So the note for if one is scornfully reviled by others is, it lets out a pathway. And what's wrong with that? If we're scornfully reviled, and by others is also, as Wei Ning is pointing out, is other aspects of our own consciousness. To look directly at the thought that's arising, to look directly at it is a pathway, can be a pathway, is what Sui Tu says. And what's wrong with that? That is the path of freedom from our distorted thoughts, from our old stories. Our realization, our revilement of our own deeds is the path out of repeating them. I think this says, if we grieve at our unskillful conduct, that grieving is a pathway to not repeating and repeating the same old thing. And then the next line where it says, this person has done wicked acts in previous ages, is followed by the note, Zoe Do says, ass loads and horse loads. The truth is, the fact, ass loads and horse loads of misdeeds, crooked thoughts, misperceptions, is the way of all sentient beings. That's what our life is like. How could we think that we're like pure and that we're not going to experience the three poisons of greed, anger, and ignorance? And so he just sits right there. It's ass loads and horse loads of wicked acts, wicked thoughts, angry thoughts, greedy thoughts, selfish thoughts. And again, the next line, but because of the scorn and vilification in the present age, and Zuishu says, paying off the roots has effects that extend to the branches. Going directly to the suffering that's causing our acting in those ways. To go to the root of my grasping, of my anger, my separation from others. And that way I nurture my growth, my possibility of spring. And at the last part of this where he says, then the wicked actions are extinguished, Sui Tu says, this is adding another layer of frost upon the snow. It's like boiling water melting ice. Frost and snow. Are they one or are they two? Ice and water. Are they one or are they two? Grief and gratitude. Are they one or are they two? I might say, I did this, I thought this, I felt this, and now I'm thinking this, and now I see through it. And grief flows into gratitude. So sometimes I feel sadness when I realize how unskillful I've been with others, how spiteful I've been toward others, how I felt blaming. And I realize that my imperfections affect others. So naturally, I'm going to feel some remorse, some sadness, some grief. And through that dark night of the heart, by repenting but not dwelling there, I can experience that awake mind the Diamond Sutra is talking about. I can drive my confusion away and not be imprisoned by repeating the action. Then I might say, hey, it's Easter Sunday. It's the last Seder night. And I can recognize the gratitude for the teachings that guide me and help me to cross over, to help others cross over. How can we do that? Continuously allow that grief and gratitude to lap over us, to heal us. It's that grief that Diamond Sutra is teaching us, Wei Ning and Zui Tu, all three of them, are implying that there's a cleansing that takes place when we're honest with ourselves, when we look directly. Yeah, we are responsible for our conduct. And that act of stopping and seeing, stopping the rapid succession of thoughts, the reactive storytelling, the reactive blame, stops that creation of that separateness, then we can feel our actual mind as whole, momentary, alive, moving away from the story to the moment, the true moment, not the hidden, not the moment we're moving away from, but the moment as it is. And so we have this ritual practice here at the Zendo of stopping the thoughts so that we can experience the moment. Not losing ourselves in the old way, thought after thought after thought, but allowing the awakened mind to settle. And that's our ritual practice here. Take a still posture and turn the light around. This week, as I was thinking of this, I wondered about this Fraser Glenn Miller, the man accused of killing, the killings in Overland Park. This week seems to have lived a life of hatred and violence. And I wondered if that man had been able to penetrate into his hatred, if he had been able to stop the slogans and the old stories long enough to see it not as a mountain of knives, but as an ocean of tears, of his own suffering. Would he have been released from his harmfulness? We won't know, but I wonder, would he have been released? But I do know that when we place our attention inside and allow a vast field of awareness, when we pass through that narrow door of fixed ego, we can realize our inheritance. Vast awakening. So this is our ritual. It's like washing the feet on Maundy Thursday, like reading the story of Exodus every year, weeping and celebrating. Celebrating our ongoing project of waking up and what that entails. Let me end with a gatha to inspire you. A pale leaf appears on the stark winter limb. A familiar bird song is back. It is April, another spring. Let's celebrate and meditate. Next year, awakening.